It's 7 p.m. Thursday, and this is All About Wine. With All About Wine's resident wine expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
First, we were talking last week about Asian wineries and Asian grapes. We're going to finish up Australia today. That's what we're doing with the France. So we're continuing with France. Tonight. Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly. Mike and I were talking about is the possibilities of hooking up with different wineries in different states and finding out what's going on. Sounds like it might be a whole lot of fun.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery in Basser, Kansas.
Organic Farm on the coast of Maine near Mount Desert Island.
Westport Rivers, Westport Mass.
HaberHill.com. The Napa Valley of the Midwest.
RainbornWines.com. In Santa Rosa.
Ten Spoon in Montana.
Alba Vineyards.
We're the largest estate vineyard in New Jersey.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery. New Jersey's top-rated winery for 2011.
India Vineyards on Route 93 at the main highway coming right up the center of New Hampshire out of Massachusetts.
Bebach Winery.
We are actually the highest-rated red wines in New Mexico.
Well, Southwest Wine is actually located in Deming, New Mexico.
Well, La Viña is the oldest winery in New Mexico.
Castello di Borghese, the first winery established in Long Island.
Flathead Lake Winery, and we're located at Cushion Park in Montana.
Mammoth Prairie Winery in Moscow, Idaho.
Brotherhood is America's oldest winery since 1839.
Ithaca, New York, College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
The website is freethegrapes.org.
All right, grab a phone and let's talk about wine tonight. Dial area code 646-727-3235. That's 646-727-3235. All right, let's start the show and let's talk about wine.
Thank you, Busty. Warm weather. Busty for him.
Yes. They are enjoying the warm climate that we have here.
Down here really, in Florida, yes.
Yeah, it's amazing. It was, 80 this morning or this afternoon, I mean?
Yeah, I think it hit 80, yeah.
Yeah, it was nice.
It was.
All right. Well, let's see. We are on, and don't forget to follow the show. You can like us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And it's the same thing on Twitter. You can follow little updates that hopefully I'll post tonight as the show continues. Go to twitter.com/allaboutwinebtr or email the show allaboutwine101@gmail.com. Do that, and I'll give those out a little bit later towards the end of the show, and hopefully we'll hear from you. So call. 646-727. Okay. There you go.
3235.
We were talking about Firefox a minute ago, and I just looked up. I have 8 tabs loaded, and I don't know why I have that many tabs. So it just kind of confused me there for a second. But one of those is Blog Talk Radio.
Good. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I'm listening. Let me bug out of here.
Phil?
I guess it's. Yeah. I'll be right back. I'll see you in a minute.
All right. We've got ourselves a guest tonight from Oregon, where we have been for the last couple of 3 weeks. Excuse me. We have some new listeners out there. I'm sure we do. I've been talking to people that stopped by the winery. Hopefully they're listening. If they're not listening, then hopefully they'll pick this up on archives. For all of you who are listening to this on archives, thank you for listening to us at one time or another. Anyway, we do appreciate it. And so let us know anything, any questions you have. You can get in touch with us through the website or Facebook or any of those other things, or even call us during the program. If you ever have any questions for our speakers, our people who are joining us on the program, you can always call us at 646-727-3235, and Mike will get a hold of you and before we bring you on the air and get you on, have any questions you have for us. So we're going to be talking to Phil tonight. Phil is from, I hope I pronounced this right, Alex Ely, winery. And interesting thing, they do some kosher wines, and I'm very curious about that. Alex Ely is located in, like I say, in Oregon, but the actual area where they are, wait a minute, I just had it here and I lost it. They are located in Molalaya, I think it's pronounced, on Highway 213 in Molalaya, Oregon. And We don't have Phil ready with us yet. He's still trying to get a hold of him. I guess that is him. I guess he's in the green room. We have our green room. Phil, are you there? Hello, Phil. Nope, Phil's not there. So we'll go back to the green room. But we have, let me go check, Alex Ellie. I think it's pronounced Alex Ellie. I'm on his website here, and I'm trying to find where it says contact us or here is visit.
We're ready.
Oh, are you? Okay, good.
Yeah.
There they are. That's so. Phil, you're with us.
Yeah, hello.
Hello, fantastic. Finally, we get you on the air. We've been kicking this around for, 2-3 weeks now. So.
Yeah, well, it's a busy time of the year. We're just I'm still pruning, and we're taking a lot of big wood off, so it's taking a lot longer days, and pouring wine all over Portland and Oregon. And
it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're busy out there. Well, welcome to the show. First question, is it pronounced Alex Ely? Alex Ely?
It's pronounced Alex Ely.
Alex Ely, okay. Alex Ely Winery. And
it's my middle name and my brother's middle name.
Oh, okay.
His middle name, he says Eli, but we made it Alex Ely because it's, you know, that just sounded nice, and
it flowed.
People say Alex Ely. I don't even correct them. If people remember a name, you got to just appreciate that.
That's right. As long as they know what it is,
right?
You are. So, tell us about Alex Ely Winery.
Well, we are an 18-acre estate vineyard. We grow Chardonnay, Riesling, Gewürztraminer, Pinot Noir, and Mueller Turgau.
Uh-huh.
But we're on a 61-acre property. The winery is right here in the Gewürztraminer. We have about an 18-acre riparian area, an 8-acre lake within that. So that's kind of key for the terrain and the temperatures. That lake really provides us some warmth late on in the season. And beyond that, winemaking-wise, I manage the grapes. I also make the wine here.
Uh-huh.
And we really focus on fruit-forward, fresh, barely, maybe a touch off dry white wines, and, of course, our Pinot, which is all Pommard Pinot. And we get a very European style, and I think it's a really versatile pairing wine. As Pinots go, but very low new oak. We do about a 16-month oak in the barrel, maturation period, and
16 months is quite a long period of time, though. I mean, that's you're looking almost a year and a half there. That is fair. You using French oak?
Yeah, only French oak. Just. Not necessarily new oak, because the Pommard is easily overwhelmed with oak. So you want to be careful doing that, because I'm really looking to make a fruit-forward Pinot, something where the fruit is expressed and the it's just very easy. It's not like a Cab or a Malbec. It's just, overdoing it on the oak is just so easy with the Pommard. So we only do about 10 or 15% new French oak, and the rest is, 2-year, 3-year-old barrels.
Uh-huh. So you do get 3 years out of them. Let's go back to Alex Ely. How long have you been there?
The label is 4 or 5 years old this year.
Oh.
So not too long, but our vineyard is 33 years old. So it's one of the oldest plantings out here. I don't know about the oldest. Everyone likes to talk about whose is older. Everyone says theirs is the first, or,
Who cares?
who cares? But we got, 6-inch trunks, and...
Wow.
I'll tell you, having an older vineyard, has different challenges, certainly, than starting new, especially back when they had the limited materials to build vineyards. And so I deal with a lot of really old, thick, malleable wires and... you know, old telephone pole posts, and it's quite quite hilarious.
Using drip irrigation, or do you need it?
No, I don't. I don't believe in irrigation. I dry farm.
Do you?
Yeah, we dry farm here. Yeah, and I don't really, you know, I really don't think we need it. We have such dry summers out here, and I think our soil, which is primarily a woodburn clay, holds enough moisture.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's just, I don't know. I'm a pretty hands-off grape grower, other than obviously disease control and low input into the vineyard. And I mean, it goes hand in hand with how I do the wines as well. Doing irrigation be another step or a level into, you know, meddling with nature that just doesn't make sense to me. I really am a believer in vintage wines, and they can, you know, different years can give you many different challenges.
Yeah,
and that's
just true.
That's what makes a vintage, right?
It does. You're absolutely right about that. So you're sort of letting nature take care of the grapes for you then.
You have to spray. Every vineyard in the world has to spray something, you know, to help with disease control and mitigating any pressures of disease, and mostly mildew and botrytis.
Right.
Rot. But you know, we do most. I mean, I think by far the most effective means is physical managing of the vine in terms of pulling leaves, not having, you know, a heavy load on crop. You know, if you have an even balanced vigor on your site, you hopefully don't have too many shoots per foot, which would cause crowding and moisture and, you know, basically forming a perfect environment for mold and mildew and rot. So
you trim yours pretty heavily then?
We do, you know. I don't know if we, you know, we'll go through and pick, you know, pull buds early on to get a good even spacing. If, you know, if two buds are coming out, basically what I do is I about every 4 to 5 inches we have a shoot, so... but if there's any more than that, you know, we walk through when they're about 2 inches long and just, you know, nick them off. If they're going the wrong direction or if it's just too thick or, you know. We also actually leave kicker canes, which is useful in helping with vigor and trying to get some smaller berry size, which results in some higher tannin, as we, I think, know that, you know, higher tannin is just, is equivalent to a better quality wine.
Right.
Usually vineyards that produce too much grapes don't have enough tannin, and they're just uninteresting wines.
So you do this to all of your grapes then? You don't just, not just the Pinot Noir, but to everything you
Oh, yeah. People sell, you know, you can buy, when you buy grapes, you know, white wine grapes are so much cheaper than like Pinot or the red varietals. But to be frank, I spend just as much time in the Gewurztraminer as I do in the Pinot. And I spend just, I mean, it's if you want to make good wine, you know, you gotta do the job right.
Right.
We spend just as much time certainly in the white varietals. And actually, the white varietals take a little more time because they're a little, on our site, our whites are a little more vigorous, and it requires just a bit more hand work to bring them to balance a little more, you know, in terms of getting to flowering and a lot more fruit to trim in the whites. You know, our whites produce three clusters per shoot if we didn't trim them off. So,
wow.
Yeah, we're cutting a lot of fruit come fruit set, so.
So how many acres do you have of each of your grapes that you you're
growing? We have about 3.5 of Pinot, about 5 of Chardonnay, about 4.5 each of Chardonnay and Riesling, about 2.5 of Mueller and Gewurztraminer. Depends if you count headlands, of course. But Our spaces were about 1,400 vines an acre.
Well, yeah, that's about average, so that's not too heavy. So you get about, what, 5 ton an acre then? You're trimming it back. Oh. You're probably getting four and a half.
No. We get about 2.25 to 2.5 in the Pinot.
Wow. You really are trimming that.
Yeah, we get about 3.5 in the Riesling, maybe barely three in the Chardonnay. You got to consider bird damage. You know, that's for us, that's like a 10% loss every year, at least. In 2010, we lost all of our Gewürztraminer to the birds.
Wow.
And we didn't make one in 2010. Very sad. But it's like hard enough with Gewürztraminer. If you know anything about Gewürztraminer, you know it's hard.
It's really a tough grape to grow and to keep, you know, keep the sugars up and all that stuff. Once you do, though, the birds are coming in and eating them.
they love the Gewürztraminer more than anything, I think. Actually, Gewürztraminer ripens and it loses its acid pretty early. And so,
right.
I don't know, it loses its acid quicker than the Pinot. And I think the birds just know something that, something before you know. They're in tune.
Are you netting anything then?
No, we have cannons, and I got we put bird tape up that is a Mylar tape basically that wiggles in the wind and makes them scared, I guess. But I'll tell you something, they do not care. We end up driving up and down. I got to wake up at 6 in the morning just to hop in the RTV and drive around honking. If you've ever seen starlings,
yes,
or they're in flocks of 500 or 600, and
yes, they are.
They
big
fly,
black clouds.
Yeah, clouds, yeah, and they fly in unison, almost like acrobats. They all turn instantly together, and it's just really awesome to see. But they could clear our entire vineyard in probably about 4 days if I didn't drive around honking and have cannons going.
Wow.
And actually, in the past, they've eaten the 4 acres of Riesling in a weekend, which is... That's pretty terrible, huh?
Yes, it is. Yes, that's amazing. We talked to Long Island wineries there, and they net. Everybody in Long Island nets their grapes before they harvest because they're in the migratory bird path, and if they don't, they're going to lose them just like you said you do.
I don't doubt that. We can't. I have a Geneva double curtain system at this point. I'm actually switching it over this year. I'm starting to switch over to a different system. But we can't net.
With the Geneva double curtain, you're really spread out. That'd be almost impossible.
Right. Well, there's nothing to hook them onto the nets. And actually, this year, every third row I put to a California flop. So I cut an arm off and rewiring, and then training suckers from last year this year, and they'll grow, and then next year we'll chop trunks and retrain stuff to vertical shoot. And at vertical shoot, we can totally net, which would be lovely.
Yeah.
Not that nets are very much easy, they're tedious to put up, and they're more than tedious to take down.
Right, but you weigh that against the fact that you've lost your entire Gewürz crop. Yeah.
Exactly. I can go on vacation for a week or two, right?
Maybe.
unlikely. Unlikely. But at least I wouldn't be driving around,
Drive around at 6 in the morning honking your horn.
It's terrible. It's awful. It's every hour, 2 hours, I gotta do a 30-minute drive around honking.
That's amazing. Amazing. That's a good way to earn a little extra income. Have kids who are learning to drive come out and say, okay, you can drive for a half hour and, do the turns and everything, and it's only going to cost you $20 to get that practice.
Yeah, that would be good. I don't know about letting them use the RTV, though.
Yeah, well, that's true. They'll go crazy. I'm really curious. You have some kosher wines. What makes them kosher, and why are you doing kosher wines?
A couple reasons. First of all, The process really isn't any different other than the fact that I cannot touch that wine. From when it's picked and it, once it enters the destemmer, no one can touch it except for the OU, the Orthodox Union, has kosher workers, and two of them are Rabbi Rifkin and Rabbi Perlstein, one out of Hillsboro, Oregon, one out of Salem, Oregon. And they come here whenever I want to do anything. They come and they do it, but I stand there over their shoulder like a hawk, and they've actually never worked on wine, so I've been, I guess, training them slowly through the tasks that must be done, and they do all the work all the way through bottling, and once it has a double seal, which would be either a cork in a capsule or a screw cap is considered a double seal. Then I can touch the bottle, or a non-kosher worker can touch the bottle. So
wow,
it's these guys never went on a forklift in their life, and our forklift is 28 years old and it's six shift, and I'm practically like grabbing this guy's legs, moving his feet on the on the forklift. But in terms of why, we were looking it up. I'm Jewish. I'm not observant by any means. I really don't. I'm not one for religion too much. But I am still my heritage, and it might just feel like one of the kosher wines come out of Oregon, and it seemed like a really cool challenge, and a way to stick out in the market, and it's kind of my way of maybe expressing my, my heritage to some degree. And, it's certainly interesting and a new, something different.
That's interesting. So from the vineyard to the final bottled product, that it's out of your hands then, technically.
Well, I make every decision. I cannot physically grab the hose. I mean, if you look at most wineries in the world, the head winemaker never really touches the wine.
No, that's
too
true.
Much. And in this case, I'm like standing over these guys' shoulders like every second of the way. And we only, it's 1/10 of our production.
Is there a market?
I don't know. We just released our 2010 Pinots a week and a half ago. And that's
first.
Yeah, and we sold, maybe 10% of it. So we'll find out if the investment and the a bit of the stress on my part was worth it. But, we'll see how it does.
You're going to continue the kosher project then?
Say again?
You're going to continue the kosher wines then?
Yeah, we did do a 2011. And I guess we'll see how the next few months go in terms of doing a 2012, because there's a lot of upfront investment on this.
Just going to stay with the Pinot, or are you going to do expand it to other wines, other grapes?
Probably just stick with the Pinot. I'm probably just going to stick with the Pinot. In terms of white wines and in terms of bottle price, a lot of our upfront costs, doesn't matter how much we produce, it's just warranting, three extra bucks a bottle. I don't want to, I kind of have a philosophy, at least an idea in my head about who should be able to afford wines, and, not like a $15 bottle of Riesling is like super cheap or super expensive. I know you can get a bottle of Riesling for like $6 or $5 places.
Right.
Yeah. But at the quality we have, I'm not sure I'm interested in selling wine, like a Riesling over $15. I'm not comfortable with it.
I'm not trying to put you in a dilemma here.
Yeah. Oh no, it's it's kind of like everyone should be able to enjoy good, like, handmade, you know, wine. And
yes.
I just, you know, putting too big a price on there just makes me feel bad.
But what is the weather like around your vineyards there? Is it the highs in the summer, the lows in the winter? Just a general synopsis of what the weather does for you.
Well, we have – everyone likes to talk about Oregon like it's the wettest place on the planet in the Willamette Valley. And it's just absolutely not. You know, I'm sure there's wetter years. But our winters are so mild. This year, particularly mild. I think the average has got to be above 40, 42 degrees.
Wow.
In the day. Maybe lows of 35 at night. And we haven't really seen anything below 25, 28 at all.
Wow.
But it's, you know, it's rain, you know, it rains one week, it's sunny the next. But then we'll get a large spurt of rain come spring. Like last year, the last 2 years, actually, we had an extended spring, which was like 45 to 55 degrees all the way through June. It was very extended spring, extended kind of growing season for, that's kind of why we had this strange couple of vintages here. But we have an absolutely dry, hot summer, which is perfect. I mean, plenty of water. I think on average, we, you know, in terms of total water in the year, it's the equivalent of Chicago or something like that. We just get it all. We just get it all in late winter or spring, and then we just have an absolutely dry summer. Very low humidity, pretty pure sunshine, and hopefully that runs all the way through the end of fall, right?
Yeah.
And I think really the first drop of rain would happen probably the last, well, maybe the second week of October or the first week of November. You know, temperatures start to drop. But, I mean, in terms of our site in particular, we kind of definitely, I mean, we like to say we have a microclimate of sorts within our region here. I think we see a lot less rain, especially late in the season, at our site. We're on the foothills of the Cascades. And if you look at the topography of the local, like, 10 miles, we have a small range over to our east, and there's kind of a J-hook of clouds that, and if you look at the whole Willamette Valley area, how rain moves, it kind of J-hooks from the south, and we kind of don't see a lot of that rain because we're on the east side, which is really beneficial when you're trying to control rot. But beyond that, we have on our hill, at the bottom of our hill, is this 8-acre lake, which is just a mass of warmth. And
does that lake freeze in the winter?
No, absolutely not. It doesn't get cold enough here, but a lot of vineyards, you might see the bottom of the hill, they get some frost damage or something like that. But, you know, the bottom of the Riesling here, about 400 feet above the lake.
Oh, wow.
Just is kicking all the way through and, you know, no frost damage or anything like that, if that comes about in late October.
That's when you – when is bud break usually then?
Well, usually last year bud break was – see, that's the thing about last year, is that extended cold spring, and we kind of had a bud – bursting, but then it froze, and then everything shrunk. And it really didn't end up until the first week of May, maybe 7th, 8th, 9th. I think the average is the 15th of April. That's what we're looking at this year, I think, especially with this warm winter and with hopefully the warmer spring. I guess there's been a La Nina, you know, over the south, over the Pacific, the last 2 years, and it's brought all this cold, and there's never been a third consecutive year of having a La Nina. So, in 117 years, so we're hoping that results in some warmer there. Now, they're also saying that the Pacific is a few degrees colder or something than in the past, and it takes a long time for that cold water to move out or to warm up. And, you know, as a farmer, well, you can really, you can just have hope.
That's
you
right.
Know.
That's right. All the time. You hope it's getting better. Then when do you harvest? You said that the gewurz is usually the first, but when is the harvest usually starting over?
Well, actually, we pick our Mueller first because I like Mueller really drops its acid pretty early in veraison. We're talking like 19 and a half to 20 bricks. So you don't, you know, depending, of course, on the style of wine you want to make and all this and that.
Right.
You try to pick around 20 bricks, 20, you know, under 20.5, because the acid will just drop out. And that'd be like the second week of October.
Oh, that's pretty late, though.
Somewhere between the 7th and the 14th of October, I would say. And then shortly thereafter, the gewurz comes off. I get kind of technical, start thinking about the last few years, and like the Pinot has been picked in the last four vintages somewhere between the 15th and the 1st of November. So
that seems late in the season, though. That's, you know, compared to some of the people I've talked to around the country and everything, that seems to be late. A lot of people are picking almost a month earlier than that.
Yeah, you know, in hot climates, people are picking in September. But that's what makes the Willamette Valley so unique and so ideal for not only for Pinot Noir, but for white varietals too, is that we just have a slower ripening. That's kind of key to flavor development and richer characteristics and good Pinot Noir. So you know, that's kind of that's the idea with the cool climate, you know, viticultural agenda.
Oregon has fascinated me when we've been talking to you, all of you up there this past, you know, couple months, because I never realized that the microclimates were so prominent in Oregon. It just seems like everywhere you have yourself little small things that are shielded from other areas, like the Willamette Valley has got the ocean influence a lot, and where you have
all our rain is right off the Pacific, for sure, coming from Alaska, or, you know, coming from south out in the middle of nowhere out there.
Yeah.
I mean, and a lot of the weather patterns I see when I, you know, zoom out on you know, those interactive maps I look at too often. And, you know, we're getting rain that's like the same rain that's falling on Japan. It's kind of odd.
Wow.
But, yeah, you know, and there's, I'd say about, you know, visiting other wineries and vineyards all around the valley here, on the outskirts of the valleys, there's just a lot of, like, very unique topographies where there's 600 feet of earth busting out of the ground, and, you know, you can drive up and around it there's just a lot of unique niches of topography that just make for a lot of different kind of interesting sites, which I think results in a wide variety of wine styles and grapes, you know, in terms of the fruit coming off being very different from someone, you know, within 5 miles even.
Yes, that's what people are saying. You are in the Willamette Valley AVA? Okay, there's no sub-AVA for you there, then?
No, not right here. Despite the fact there's a lot of acreage out here, there's very few wineries out here. And, you know, I'm sure there's various reasons for that. But, you know, I think there's some, like, 2,000 or 2,500 acres of vineyard on this side of the valley. There's just only a handful of us wineries, and we're all very small, single-family, very hands-on winemaker, grape growers. And we're not so much big business like so many on the other side of the valley, but Yeah, just a little bit more intimate, and I like to think all of Oregon is a little more European in that sense, that we're just kind of small, intimate productions.
It seems that way. It seems like there's an awful lot of little small mom and pop, if you will, that type of approach to the little wineries everywhere there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it kind of speaks to what Oregon is, what you see. I wouldn't say typical, it's just very, you know, I come from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, of all places.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, I lived in Chicago, I lived in Philadelphia, I lived in upstate New York. And, you know, in terms of small businesses, Oregon is just filled with people who are entrepreneurs and people who are, you know, like to be their own boss and have their own, express their own craft and things. And, makes for a huge diversity of wine, of caterers, of, you know, restaurants, of people making very unique products with their farms, and it's just really cool, I think.
We noticed that in the wineries we talked to, a lot of people are into the farm winery type thing and all. I had some questions about your wines here, too. Some of the names. Bubilla's Blend?
Oh, yeah, Bubilla's Blend, that's right.
The base of the name itself, Bubilla's, and then a Chardonnay Riesling. I've seen one other Chardonnay Riesling blend that came out of, where was it? New Mexico.
That Bubilla's Blend is the Chardonnay Riesling, and then in 2009 it was a Chardonnay Mueller, very small amount of Mueller, a very small amount of Chardonnay. I'm sorry, very small amount of Mueller in the 2009, very small amount in the 10 in terms of Riesling, and that's our only blend. But Bubilla, the name itself is, if you were Russian, Polish, of that kind of descent, your grandmother, if you were a little infant boy, your grandmother would call you Bubilla.
Oh! Obviously, I'm not of that descent. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's kind of a cute name, like a name of endearment. That would be. And the label is a painting. A painting by Peter Hoffman. It's of a woman. And I don't know. I kind of was inspired by that a little bit as well, in terms of like that's grandma when she was young, and imagining of the child she might have, and it's Bubilla's Blend, and I have no idea. Sometimes you just come up with things and decide to do them, you know.
Yeah.
So people have taken well to it. So.
The Blumenvon. You have Blumenvon Gewurz and a Blumenvon Riesling also.
Right. Yeah, those are our dessert wines.
Okay.
And Blumenvon just simply means flowers of.
Oh, okay.
So they're very aromatic and amazingly actually refreshing and light. For a dessert wine, they're very low sugar, about 4.5 to 5.5% sugar.
So not real high at all.
Sugar. No, and not cloyingly sweet. So still very balanced and refreshing, and a lot of good acid. So they're very, it's surprisingly, people are surprised by. I've had some French dessert wines, or just some European, and I just thought I'd never want to make those because they're just lacking in acid and kind of too sweet, you know.
Yeah.
But if you walk through a vineyard when it's flowering, at least when I walk through this vineyard when it's flowering, there's just amazing citrus, lime, grapefruit, just tons of citrus in the Gewurztraminer and in the Riesling. Actually, in the Chardonnay as well. Just an aroma. If you're within 100 feet, you can just soak it in. You're like walking into another world of really strong aromatics, and that's kind of almost as if you were...
I have, and yeah. I know what you mean. It does. It's just the flowering grapevines are just, it's a unique aroma that just attacks your senses, like not just your nose, but you actually almost feel it. It comes out so fragrant and so strong. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying there.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yes, it is. But government, the Oregon government, are they good, bad, indifferent? You hate them, you love them, you want to kiss them, want to kick them? What is your opinion of?
what I can say about that is that I hate paperwork. And the amount of paperwork just to be a farmer.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of licenses and things you need, and then on top of it to make wine. Oh my God! You know, we I think there's like 15 agencies. And actually, recently I just signed on for not a government agency, but another group, live certification, low input viticulture certification, which is a whole other set of paperwork. But the amount of paperwork is just unbelievable to make and sell wine. And
yes, I know.
I guess there's a level of resentment for that. But you know, it's pretty like the OLCC. I think they're the only distributors of alcohol, not wine, but of alcohol in the state. I don't know if I believe in that, but it's pretty. They're pretty easy. It's very friendly. You know, they're really nice to work with. Anytime I've had to, I've always had this strange fear and I get anxiety about it, but it always turns out like, why am I afraid? I'm just afraid of the government, I think. And the TTB is the same way. For a small producer, you know, I'm sure they're not, you know, if you're making 100,000 cases a year, they're probably knocking on your door every other week. But they've made it pretty easy for us, so. I can't complain about the paperwork because it's unbelievable.
Oh, I know. I have a winery down here. I'm not just I don't just talk to you. I have a winery and I know exactly what you mean. I mean, you just end of every month, you just get overwhelmed with all the paperwork that has to be done. And I talked to a guy who's a winemaker out in California a number of about 3 years ago. He complained about the same thing. He says, I got into it so I can make wine. He said, now I spend all my time doing paperwork for the government. So,
yeah, they want to know every gallon goes, every you got to have such. You know, I'm getting better with it, too, you know, trying to make my own system so that I don't leave anything out. But
yeah. And the top part has to match with the bottom part, and if it doesn't match, then you got to go back and see why. And oh, I know. It gets to be, you know, you want to pull your hair out.
Well, hopefully you really have less than you think.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, really, really.
You can always just claim. You can claim that you drank it.
That's right. If personal use. There's that line on there. Personal use. And then you just. You know. Do you? Yeah. Are you in a wine trail or a part of a wine? Wine area there that you. The winery's part, or do you out
well,
by yourself?
There's tour groups that come through here that are organized by other people. There's a lot of individual tour groups that people have set up for themselves to take people around. And there's a tour around here, and it's basically an East Valley tour, which includes us and a bunch of other wineries that are within about 15 miles of here. I mean, there's about 8 or 9 wineries within 15 minutes of me.
Wow.
But we see, I don't know. We're really only open on the weekends, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And we might see 30 people, 40 people a day. And that's pretty good.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Can't complain too much about that.
Do you have festivals or events or concerts or anything there?
Yeah, we have live music. I bring out, last year we brought the swing. I don't know if you like Django Reinhardt style swing,
right.
Gitan, swing gypsy jazz stuff. We bring a group out called Swing Papillon out from, they're from Portland.
Mm.
Couple times a year, and another group, Ben Graves and Blake Lyman, they're a duet. They come out and play, and we'll do that probably once a month, maybe twice a month at most. But we're actually, we have a big field above the lake here. It's about 5 acres of just kind of long grass and prairie. And we're looking at doing a big lavender farm, maybe a half acre of lavender down there. And,
oh, wow.
Done something up, but we'll see what happens.
Now, we talked, I can't remember, Mike, you know where that, we talked to somebody who did it, who had a lavender farm. I can't remember.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, what state that was in. But, you know, we've run across. Mike, do you have any questions for Phil here?
No, I'm very good. I'm enjoying the information and was also looking at your website while you're discussing different things. And I see you have a wine club and you have where you can purchase the wines online. It looks like it goes through a third-party distributor.
Our online sales are through northwestwines2u.com. And
yeah.
They're out of Lafayette, Oregon, and they do all of our compliance and kind of take the hassle out of that.
Do they ship anywhere then, basically, like in the U.S. or beyond that, or is
it
restricted?
I don't know them by heart.
Okay.
Most, I would say 38 out of the 50 states.
Okay. Yeah,
obviously, there's like Utah, and I think Delaware does an issue, and Vermont maybe, and those are just state licenses that are hard to get. But basically, I would have to do every state myself for every order, and to get a $150 license to sell in that state, and I might sell one person.
Yeah.
A two pack or something. And it makes it's really convenient for us. But if you go to our site, you can click on buy online, and it goes right to our page on their website. So.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, I was just looking through there. Very nice. Good information on there. So, yeah, that's all.
Yeah,
all I had.
We're actually featuring, I think, soon. We had a small bit of 08 whites and some Pinot we were going to put up on Woot. We actually sell a little bit of wine on Woot.com.
Wow.
Just to move on to new vintages and try to expose ourselves to a wider audience. So I think tomorrow or the next day, you can find a full pack on there for a pretty good deal. But
Very good.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Anything else that you can think of that you would like to share with our listeners? If not, then give us all the information about Alex Ely, where you're located, your hours, Facebook if you have it, Twitter if you have it, everything. So they can pass on the hours of operation, where you're located and all that.
Yeah, we're at 35803 South Highway 213 near Molalla, Oregon. We're between Silverton and Molalla.
Well, nobody knows where those are. How close is that to a big city?
If you're in Portland, it's about 40 minutes south.
Oh, okay.
On the way to Silver Falls State Park.
Oh, very good.
We get a lot of people here that are on their way or on their way back from Silver Falls. We're about 30 minutes northeast of Salem, so we're kind of right in between. But you can see all that kind of information when we're open, and we're open on the weekends starting in late March.
We
gotta get work done. I gotta get work. A lot of people come, and I open up anyway, but I gotta get some work done. I do the pruning and laying down the canes and.
Where's your brother? Why isn't he helping you?
He moved to Vermont. He lives on a big hill. He's looking at the Green Mountains. I don't know.
Oh.
No, he Yeah, him and his family moved out there.
Take his name off of it.
Yeah, well, I designed the labels, and I don't want to do it again for a while.
Yeah.
No, but you can go to alexeli.com. It's just alexeli.com, and we're going to be starting a more kind of informative blog about everything that I do on it. Hopefully on a weekly basis to show, you know, tending vines and
something
to keep, something that it's nice to share, you know. It's
yes.
not worth it unless you're sharing it, so.
It'd be interesting. You should. It could be very interesting.
Something very photo heavy. My girlfriend of a long time, she's a photographer and comes in very handy.
Yes, it does.
So. Yeah.
Very cool.
Well, very good.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Phil. It was very informative. It was a joy to have you on. I'm glad we finally connected. I've been looking forward to talking with you and looking forward to seeing what kosher wine was. I'm glad I can understand that. And if I'm ever up in that area, I will definitely stop by and visit with you.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Take care.
You too now.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Little.
All right.
Wow.
Good.
Those people were... Yeah, that was very interesting. I got a full page on that one. So.
Yeah, he was very informative. He was, you know, and very,
said,
very good.
When I called him, he said he was racking... did you say racking the grapes or racking something?
Probably, racking. But you transfer from one container to the other.
Okay.
The juice, the grapes, the vines, are the wine. So.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
He says it's going to take whatever he could, you know, the process, I guess, was, he said, 200 minutes. And I thought, whoa, wow, okay, I don't know what that means, but maybe I should have caught him on air, but you got that, so.
Yeah,
very interesting.
It's moving it around and all that. It's 200 minutes. He must be doing a big batch of it or something, you know. But interesting.
Yeah,
kosher. I that was can't touch it at all.
No, I never figured that one out.
No, can't touch it at all. Nobody done. Has to be rabbi all the way through.
Wow.
I know.
Until it's double sealed or something. What do you say, double
sealed?
The
double
bottom sealed has to be double
with
sealed.
A fork and a capsule or with a screw cap, which is classified. But has to be a rabbi all the way through. No wonder we've never interviewed a kosher winery before. Geez, can you imagine? Yeah. Unless it's rabbis that are running it. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Wow.
Very good.
Yeah. So that was fun. That was fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to take just a second here and talk about, Mike and I were talking before we came on the air, about H.R. 1161. And I want to hit it again. We talked a lot about H.R. 1161 a few months ago, and then we sort of like dropped it and didn't say too much about it. H.R. 1161, or as it was called 2 years ago, H.R. 5034, when that session ended, when the congressional, and this is a federal Congress, when the House of Representatives dismissed or went on recess 2 years ago, H.R. 5034 died because it ended and all that. But it was reintroduced last year as H.R. 1161 when they went on recess for the holidays and all that this year, and this Congress ended. I thought it was going to die also, but it didn't. I called the FreeTheGrapes.org. We had an interview with them, too. If you're listening to this on archives, you can go back and listen to the old interview on that about 1161. But we had an interview. I called them, and I go, is it dead? And he said, no, it is still floating around out there. It is still available. It is still something that is not gone away yet, although nothing's happening with it. He said that the last he heard, it was not in committee. It was not up for votes. It was not anything. It was just there. But it's not gone. just being there is good because nobody's playing with it, nobody's promoting it, nobody's trying to do anything with it, but it's bad because it is still there and it's not gone. So anyone out there, freethegrapes.org, go on there, 1161, kill 1161, or go write your congressman or your representative, tell him, let's kill 1161, HR 1161 once and for all. It's basically, for those of you who are just tuning in, haven't listened to us rant about it before, it would virtually stop distribution completely for small wineries, small distilleries, and small breweries. Would force it into the hands of distributors, which, as a small winery, we cannot afford that, nor can distilleries or breweries, small distilleries or breweries. So if you are active, get a hold of your representative, tell him, let's kill 1161 once and for all. So yeah. I wanted to throw that out there. And we got a festival this weekend, so I'm going to let you talk about that.
Yes. Let's see. I believe I have that up here. Okay. Yeah, I was just looking at your newsletter. And one other thing I was going to mention about your tip jar. You have a tip jar next to the cash register at the winery. And, you know, as you go in and you're visiting the gift shop or whatever, you know, put something in there and help out the, you know, what it's for. There's different, you know, groups that that it benefits each month. And this month it is for Raffle Rescue. It's a local group that helps people who may be having financial problems keeping their pets. And they provide food and vet care if needed. That is wonderful. Bring in a bag or canned pet food and, wow, get 10% off any wine purchase, according to the newsletter. Very, very cool. So stop by definitely and, you know, do that. So definitely encourage that. And that's sounds like a good cause. So you do have a wine fest that would be the 25th? 25th.
Yeah, day after tomorrow.
Okay, yeah. The wine fest coming up on this weekend, and stand by. I'll give you the information right now. This was prepared, of course.
Coming up this Saturday at Florida Estates Winery, it's Wine Fest, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Enjoy live music, have a little fun, and shop our vendors providing unique handmade items and some brand names you have known for years. Participate in an informative wine tasting with wine expert and show host, Ron. Sample some of Florida Estates Winery's world-class wines. Shopping is always fun, and Wine Fest is a great way to pick up unique gift items. Come out to Florida Estates Winery and enjoy the weekend with us. Listen to live music and shop under the giant oak trees while enjoying a glass of your favorite wine. This is a family event, and pets are welcome at Florida Estates Winery. See you there. Florida Estates Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call 813-996-2113 or email corp@floon.com. That's corp@floon.com for more information. Florida Estates Winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Wow. Right?
Wow. You know, every time I hear that, I want to duck or something. It sounds like something going on there.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
We got to go with the production department and see if they can redo that one. I don't know. Visit Florida Estates Winery, which is located 4 miles west of I-75 on State Road 52. That is exit 285 here in Pasco County. And so you want to go to I-75 and go west 4 miles on State Road 52. That's exit 285, located, for those of you punching it in the GPSs, at 25241 State Road 52. That's in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 34639. Call the winery directly at area code 813-996-2113. 813-996-2113. Or visit the website for more information, details, upcoming events, that kind of thing, wine classes, the Wine Fest information, some photos are on there as well. And you can also subscribe to the very informative newsletter, and I'll show you what's on that in just a second, at www.floridaestateswines.com. That's plural, FloridaEstatesWines.com. And find out all kinds of information on that. It's really cool. Wineries open daily, 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. And compared to some of the other places that we've talked to where it's freezing or snowing, the weather's fantastic. And this weekend it's going to be nice. So
beautiful.
Of course,
yes.
I could tell here, it's going to be fantastic. So come on out, enjoy some wine and the entertainment and everything that's going on out there. And the vendors, of course. Shop the vendors underneath the giant oak trees. It's going to be great. So do that. But in the newsletter, you have
15 vendors.
Huh?
Yeah. 15 vendors scheduled.
Wow. That's
a lot of people coming down. Yeah.
Definitely. Great place to you know, head out. It's going to be and it's pet friendly also. Most major credit cards are accepted at the winery. And
shop
it's great.
While you're drinking a glass of wine.
Absolutely. You also, on the newsletter, you have wine facts. And so I was just going through some of those as well. That's a pretty good list of wine facts, that's for sure.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff there. But it's all about basically California Napa, and I wanted to get it on there. So.
Yeah. Wow. That's impressive. And the wine class information, you don't have a date specified just yet. You do have a recipe. What is it this time? It's St. Patrick's Day, corned beef and cabbage.
Yeah.
And,
I'm a big corned beef fan. I like that. Yeah.
Okay. So you have recipes in the newsletters as well as all the information and information on the tip jar there as well. So subscribe to the newsletter from the website at FloridaEstatesWines.com. And, of course, visit the winery when you're in the area. And if you're not in the area, you should be. Because,
right.
You know, we don't shovel snow here. We don't even know what that – they use some kind of big shovels. I don't know what it
is. Yeah,
but,
I know. It's just in the white stuff. I don't know. The only white stuff we see is the sandy beaches.
That's right. And while you're here, you can take a short trip to the
– Go to the sandy beaches.
That's right.
Oh, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the health benefits of red wine for the heart. This is February, and February is heart month. And we have to say red wine has been proven. Consumption of red wine really does help the heart. I mean, the French paradox, that's the incidence of coronary disease and artery disease in France is a fraction of what we have here in the States. And they attribute that to the consumption of red wine. So it is good for your heart. So since this is February Heart Month, red wine is a good way to help your heart.
Wow, very good.
Throw that out there.
All right, excellent. Very good. Just a reminder again is if you're on Facebook, be sure to like us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. That's one word, no capitals or anything. Well, I guess it doesn't matter with capitals on there. But All About Wine BTR. Follow us, like us on Facebook. Also on Twitter, go to twitter.com/allaboutwinebtr. And if you're on any of those, you know, make sure you follow us and don't just, you know, keep up with the page because we'd like to know how many people are actually visiting. And I think there's a not a competition, but it's like, you know, I check Facebook and it's like, okay, we're up to this amount. And then I go to Twitter and it's like, okay, we're up to this amount. So participate on there and we'll see what happens. Also, don't forget you can email the show. That's allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And, you know, if it's something that we can put on the air or you have a question or something and we can answer it on the air for you, we will do that as well. If you'd like to be a guest on the program, which I have – I did something on Twitter last week, I think, about being on the show. But if you want to be a guest, you can also send an email to that same address, allaboutwine101@gmail.com. And we'd love to have you on the air. And, you know, wine industry representatives, that kind of thing would be a great start. If you're knowledgeable, want to share some stuff about wine, you know, definitely give us a call and contact us. So
while I've got a second to racking, let me clarify that. Racking for, you know, so I just looked up. I have a little definition book here that I keep handy. Rack, the definition is when the clear wine is removed from the heavy solids, settling to the bottom of the tank. There you go. Simple explanation of rack.
Is that almost what they were doing with the egg drop also? Where they would drop the egg?
Yeah, the eggs, you know, the egg whites bring the pulls all the stuff down to the bottom of the tank, then they rack off the top of that. They pull the wine off the top of that. So you want to get the clear wine off of the solids and all that that are settling at the bottom of the tank.
So you
rack it off, you pull it off, put it in another tank, and then let it set some more, or you rack it into your oak barrels if you're going to do oak. That's rack.
Right.
Just to give a true explanation for it for anyone out there.
All right. Very cool. Yeah, because I was wondering about that earlier. I didn't ask him about it because he was, you know, it almost sounded like he was short of time, but then he said 200 minutes, so I thought, oh, we got plenty of time.
Yeah.
do we have anything for next week on the show?
Not yet, but I'm going to try to get a hold of Northeastern Oregon and see if we can't get somebody there to get on with us and talk. I contacted some of the wineries up there, and nobody was available this evening, but looking at possibly getting one or two of them on next week. So we'll stay in Oregon another week, and then I don't know who's after Oregon alphabetically. I don't know.
I guess we're starting in the P's, wouldn't it?
Are we? Pennsylvania?
Is it?
Did we get
Oregon? Oregon, Oklahoma. No, we did that. I have no idea.
I don't know. I don't know. Pennsylvania. Yeah, that's the only P we have, Pennsylvania.
I guess. Wow, okay. Yeah.
143 wineries in Pennsylvania that I got listed here on this one particular site. So,
wow.
So, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that'll be next if it's not, Oregon next week and then we'll start.
Then starting on Pennsylvania. Well, probably in Pennsylvania for a while, too, because there's a lot of wineries around there. Yeah.
A
lot of vineyards. Very cool. A lot of Welch's vineyards in Pennsylvania.
Hmm. Okay.
Awesome.
I wonder if the Amish are doing anything up there, if they stay away from that. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
There's a lot of Amish country up there.
Yeah, in central, just east of Hershey there in that area.
Yeah. All right. We'll see what happens for next week. Stay tuned to the Facebook page and, you know, Twitter and everything, and we'll let you know on there definitely as the time comes. So I guess we'll close the show for tonight unless you have anything
Nope, I'm
beyond
to talk about.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, thank you to Phil, our special guest for this evening, for talking to us. And thank you all for listening to us, either live or on the archives. We appreciate it. And, continue to do that as well as, like I said, follow us or like us and on the social networking sites that we're on. And we'll see you all next week, which would be March the 1st at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time or 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, whatever it is, 3-hour difference. And we'll see you all next time. So thanks a lot, and y'all have a great week. And thank you for listening again, and we'll see you then. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.